Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and I am your host for this evening. And we've got with us our very first guest on Lords of Limited, Travis Semulin Sowers. Travis, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Ben. How are you?
Doing well. Just got off a regional marching band competition yesterday. Band ended up in third place in like the southern half of the state, which is awesome because that's generally where the stronger bands are. So putting us on track to be one of the top three in the state. And I cleaned my apartment today and did a few drafts. Can't complain. How about you?
That sounds like a good day.
It was a great day. I saw you played in the PTQ this morning.
Yeah, I opened a pretty good deck and then managed to do the classic 1-2 drop and play something else. But such is the nature of Magic, right? Variance is a cruel and sometimes unforgiving mistress.
It is. Your deck was like, what, white-green splashing Vona, I think? Is that what you ended up settling on?
Yes, I was doing white-green splashing Vona, and I sided it in every match. I should have just splashed the Mark of the Vampire to begin with. The card's quite good in Sealed. I think it's quite good in Draft, too. But I ended up bringing that in every match, and it was very good when I resolved it.
Yeah, card is just a house. So before we roll into the main part of our episode here, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and kind of what's going on with you?
Yeah, sure. As Ben mentioned, my name's Travis Sowers. I go by the name of Semulin on Twitch. I stream predominantly Magic. I play a lot of Sealed. This format I've been playing a little bit more Draft than usual. I occasionally dip into Constructed as well. I've been playing Magic, gosh, since I was 16, and I'm now pushing 40. So almost as long as there's been Magic, I've been playing Magic. My first booster pack was actually Revised.
Oh, nice. That was my. That was when I started, too. Like, at the very end of Revised. Like, 4th edition was my first booster pack, but you could still find Revised packs if you knew where to look.
Okay. Yeah, the first thing I did was trade a Tundra for a Shivan Dragon, which was a great deal at the time.
That was actually the very first rare I ever opened, was a Shivan Dragon.
Heck yeah, that was worth money back then, man.
Yeah. So how you've been playing Magic, you said, since you were, what, 14? Is that what you said?
16.
16. So almost 24 years? Dang. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think how long I've been playing. I've been playing since a little bit less than you. I started when I was 8, I think, so maybe 20 years. So what are some of your goals with Magic?
Well, I'd say the big one for me, more so than anything else, is to be a successful streamer, to have an audience that enjoys watching what I do. Like, I'm obviously looking forward to Magic Arena as well as playing Magic online. A lot of folks ask me, because I do typically play in competitive events. I'll play in the Pro Tour preliminary qualifiers and then stream the PTQs on the weekends. They're like, well, why don't you go to the paper events? You know, because it's a little easier to qualify through that.
Sure.
It's like, nobody can watch me do that. My goal isn't necessarily to get on the Pro Tour, although I would love to. I'd probably look at that as like great advertising for the stream. Whereas I'd rather, like, the best I've done so far is losing in the finals. And by that, I mean the last round, the person who beat me went to the Pro Tour. Like, that was the highest viewership I'd have ever had. And I'd rather do that again than go win a PTQ, you know, at a local shop in Raleigh or whatever and not have anybody get to see it. So for me, it's more about the community. Like, I feel like I play cards all day and hang out with my friends, and it's just fantastic. I want to keep doing that.
Yeah, that's the dream. I mean, just in the little bit that I've been streaming here, kind of since I started in, like, April of this year, it's been really awesome to know that, like, when I come home from teaching or whatever, like, I live in a pretty small town that I can get online and stream and, like, hang out with other people that care about what I care about, which is it's really cool. So is your primary source of income from streaming then?
It's just about the only source of income. This is what I do. I'm very fortunate to have picked up some sponsors and to have, although it's not the largest community in Magic streaming, I have a very loyal community. Like, they tune in every day, and I've got a good subscriber base. So yeah, this is what I do, man. This is my job.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always get the Sem wave, the Sem Aloha Cat wave from a lot of people when they come check out my stream. That's great. So yeah, that's a little bit about Simulan. We normally do a trophy leaderboard update, so we'll check in on the number of drafts and sealed and the record for me and Travis here. I've done 31 drafts with a total of 10 trophies, so trophying about 1 in 3. I think I've been to the finals in over half my drafts. I think I've been to the finals 17 times, and I've got a 63-29 record for a 68% win rate, which is up considerably from our first 2 weeks of the podcast. Both Ethan and I were struggling quite a bit in this format initially, and I think this week, thanks to the help of Ryan Sachs, we've both kind of found our stride and kind of what we want to be doing in the format. How about you?
I am up to 8 trophies plus the Streamer Showdown win, which unfortunately doesn't count as a trophy, but works for me. Have done 26 drafts, total record of 57-21, and I have a 73% win rate.
Dang!
The most spectacular part of this was 8 2-1s in a row.
Jeez.
Yeah, I felt like at that point, like it finally ended with a 3-0, but honestly, I'd have been happy with a 1-2.
Just to mix it up a little bit?
Yeah, like I streamed for 2 solid days and only had 2-1s, and I was kind of going nuts.
Yeah, it's frustrating, especially if you're getting to the finals and losing the finals, because nobody knows. Since they started leagues and trophies seem to be kind of what drive like the leaderboard and things like that, and it's an easy way to see how well you're doing in a format, like how many trophies you have. But I think getting to the finals is pretty important too, consistently.
I think so too, and I'm actually glad that you had me do this for the podcast. I'd never bothered to look up my own win rate. I just figured if I'm not having to buy tickets, I'm good to go.
Yeah, I think I'd never tracked my win rate before we started the podcast. I think we tried to do it because when we started, we don't really have any credentials other than that we're Twitch streamers. So like if we had a good win rate, maybe that would be a reason for people to listen to our advice. I think it was initially the thought process behind it.
That's a great idea. It's nice to know that I actually do know what I'm talking about instead of just thinking that I do.
Yeah, for sure.
I dig it, man.
And then how about for Sealed? What's going on with you there?
For Sealed, I've done 8 events. I didn't actually plug in the ones from the PTQ today, now that I think about it, but total of 38 games, 23-15 record for a 60.5% win rate, which after I looked at those numbers, like initially I was like, why do I like draft so much more in this format than Sealed? When I looked at the numbers, I was like, oh, because when I play draft, I get to win more. That's way better.
Yep, winning is great.
Winning is great, but for the stream that I'm doing, I still need to play in those preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers and stream the PTQs on the weekend. So I still do care about Sealed and put a lot of effort into making sure that I do that right. I've also probably built at least 15 Sealed pools on stream. Often viewers will come and ask me to build a pool with them, and I'm quite happy to do that. So I've built a lot of pools in this format as well.
Yeah, that's very cool. I've watched that happen in your stream for sure. And then we're going to check in on our XLN treasure hunt, the achievement list Tupperware and I put out last week. People are getting busy with these, so quickly I'm going to run down which ones have been crossed off here. Sir Mix-a-Lot, that's increased the attack power of your board by 20 with Belligerent Brontodon. That was crossed off by a Twitch user named Generation D20. He's got a lot of these. Deck Pillage, that's mill your opponent out with Navigator's Ruin or Fleet Swallower without accidentally killing them. That was crossed off by Strix Familiar. Gishath and Company, that's reveal 3 dinosaurs off of Gishath. That was crossed off by Crash of Rhinos. I know she follows your stream as well.
She does.
Pirate Mutiny, sacrifice an opponent's creature to your own makeshift munitions. That's been crossed off by 2, Rosa 2058 and Generation D20. He crossed that one off playing against Lord Tupperware. Bonus points there.
Oh, nice.
So Crazy It Just Might Work, cast Bloodcraze Paladin as a 7-7. Generation D20 made it a 9-9. Buried Treasure has been crossed off by a few people. That's Win the Game via the Revel in Riches alternate win condition. That's been crossed off by Sparrow's Rum. He's another partnered streamer. Been crossed off by your very own Lord Tupperware himself and DC Sports 8, the ever-present Twitch viewer. And he streams now, too.
He does. I was actually convinced for a long time, because every time I went into a Twitch channel, DC Sports was there. I was convinced for a long time and even said on stream that I thought he was a robot. So when I went to GP Richmond, I was so happy to see this guy run up to me and say, I'm DC Sports. I'm DC Sports. I was like, okay. Confirmed not a robot, but super cool dude.
Yeah. The Swarm Intelligence Memorial Award, which is copy an instant or sorcery with Primal Wellspring. That's been crossed off by Strix Familiar again and another streamer named Mr. Ducky. and Ultimate Jace have four copies of Jace Cunning Castaway on the battlefield. That just got crossed off today by Crash of Rhinos. And when dinos fly, kill your opponent with a flying Ancient Brontodon. That's been crossed off by another streamer as well. Ehe dude, he always crushes the competitive leagues on Magic Online. So that's where we're at on the achievement list. And we'd like to take a seat at the round table now. So Semulin's going to do a draft here. This is one of my drafts that I did earlier in the format. And I don't think I navigated it particularly well. And I think I know how I would do it better this time around. And I'm curious to see where Travis is at here. Pack one, pick one. You see Contract Killing. That's the 3 black-black destroy target creature and make 2 treasure tokens at sorcery speed. Seeker Squire. That's the 1 and a black, 1/2 explore. Raging Sword Tooth. It's 3 red-green for the 5/5 trample. And when it enters the battlefield, it does 1 damage to everything. The dinosaur gold uncommon there. And Rowdy Crew, the mythic rare, 2 red-red for the 3/3 trample. Let's see if I know this card from memory. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 3 cards, discard 2 cards at random, and then if your 2 discarded cards share a card type, you put 2+1/+1 counters on the Rowdy Crew. I think that's it.
Nicely done, sir. That's exactly what it does.
Yeah.
So for me, I've had some success in draft, and I've had that success by trying to make my first few picks something that plays fine on its own. I'm not typically looking for anything that's particularly synergistic or a payoff card. I'm just looking for something that's good. So for me, I'm kind of going to flush out the Raging Sword Tooth immediately. I like the card a lot, and it often says vampire decks can't win. But being a gold card, I'm just not willing to go in on that. It's also very big, which I like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If we're going to look at a black card, we've got to decide, is Contract Killing better than Seeker Squire? And although I don't necessarily think it is, I think the effect is less replaceable. Like, I can find a 2-drop. It may not be as good as Seeker Squire, which is a premium 2-drop. But it's somewhat difficult to find unconditional killing in this format, especially some that leaves behind some fixing and potential ramp. So I think this would come down to Contract Killing and Rowdy Crew for me currently.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I would have to edge in on the Contract Killing. I wouldn't hate the crew, and I've done a lot. Like, for whatever reason, I've opened Rowdy Crew a lot and played with the card a lot. And a lot of people get upset with it and look at it and think that it's bad, that the effect can miss, that sometimes you'll discard the wrong cards. And it's like, well, that's kind of random. You can't control that. It's a format predominantly of Hill Giants, and it is a Hill Giant with Trample. It's already good, and you're up a card when you play it. So I like the card. But again, I think I could probably find something along that level. Whereas the Contract Killing is the most unique effect here. So I think I would go for the Contract Killing.
Interesting. I took Rowdy Crew then, and I would still be on Rowdy Crew now, I think. I think a 3/3 draw card, I think I'm higher on that than Contract Killing. I like Contract Killing quite a bit, but I found the 5-mana removal to be a little clunky in the format. I think my pick order here would actually go Rowdy Crew, then Seeker Squire, then Contract Killing. I've been super happy with the 2-drop explore cards. I think Merfolk Branchwalker is the best of them, the 1 and a green for the 2/1 that explores.
Absolutely.
And then Seeker Squire, if you hit a land, I think you're a little disappointed with the 1/2, but I mean, if you need to hit your 3rd land drop, I mean, obviously it's great. It just makes your deck so much more consistent. But I do agree, removal is hard to come by in this format, and Contract Killing is certainly a good one. So on Contract Killing for Travis there, pack one, pick two here, you see Unfriendly Fire, 4 and a red. That's the instant speed, deal 4 damage to target creature or player. Shaper Apprentice, that's the 1 and a blue for the 2/1 merfolk that gains flying when you control another merfolk. Pirate's Cutlass, that's the artifact, 3 mana for an equipment. When it enters the battlefield, you must attach it to a pirate you control if you control a pirate. It's got an equip cost of 2, an equipped creature gets +2/+1. And Dire Fleet Hoarder, that's 1 and a black for the 2/1 pirate that when it dies, you get a treasure token.
Okay, this one's a pretty easy pick for me. And I should also mention, I have a tendency when I make my first few picks to just put them straight in the sideboard and not assume that I'm playing them, just so that I don't get tunnel vision about one thing in particular. But this is a nice and easy one. I can take the Pirate's Cutlass, put it in any deck, and have a bonus if I happen to have some pirates. I've been super impressed with that card. I have already second picked it. Would happily do so again.
Yeah, that card is great. I incorrectly, I think, second picked Unfriendly Fire here to go along with my Rowdy Crew early in the format. I wasn't quite on how good Pirate's Cutlass was. And in hindsight now, I would take Pirate's Cutlass 10 out of 10 times.
If you caught me 2 weeks ago, I would have said the same thing. What I know now about Unfriendly Fire that I didn't then is that it's basically a flexible lava axe instead of an actual removal spell, because it's not killing dinosaurs and you're always down mana if you're trying to kill something smaller. So it's not actually as great as it initially looks. And I thought Pirate's Cutlass needed to go with Pirates, but it kind of doesn't. It just needs to go in your deck.
Yeah, it's great in every deck. I think it's best in Vampires, actually, and does some good stuff in Merfolk, too. Mm-hmm. And you'll even play it in a Dinosaurs deck. There are so few mana sinks in the format that being a good one, and the creatures are all so, like, the power level's so flat among all the creatures that having the ability to make your creatures outclass your opponents one by one is a pretty big game.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so Travis has got Contract Killing and a Pirate's Cutlass in his pile now, and pack one, pick three, he sees the following cards. New Horizons, that's two and a green for the Enchant Land. And then when New Horizons enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, and then your land can tap to add two mana of any one color to your mana pool. Dive Down, this card has been overperforming and continuing to go up and up still, in my estimation. Single blue for an instant. Target creature you control gets +0/+3 and gains hexproof until end of turn. There's another Dire Fleet Hoarder here. That's the one in a black 2/1 that makes treasure. Colossal Dreadmaw, the big dino, 4 green for the 6/6 trample dinosaur. And Lookout's Dispersal, that's 2 and a blue for the instant that lets you counter target spell unless your opponent pays 4 mana. And if you control a pirate, it costs 1 less to cast. So 1 and a blue if you control a pirate.
I do just have to mention that Dive Down is so much better than I initially thought it was going to be.
It's great, yeah. Like, 1 mana interaction in this format's very good. And I think the auras are also all very good in this format. So having the ability to protect your creature that you put an aura on is big game.
Yeah, like I had somebody ask me why I was playing this in a blue-green deck where I also had the 3-mana +3/+3 and trample crash the ramparts. I was like, well, this is going to win me a lot of the combats that would, and it's also going to give me a 1-mana negate in certain scenarios. And I had an opponent just rage at me in chat. It was beautiful. I showed up to the stream. We're like, I knew they were holding specifically unfriendly fire from the way that they were playing, and they were going to have to kill my, God, what's the spiked Ceratops, the 4/4 guy that can block multiple things?
Oh, yeah.
So like, I was like, you know, if we're playing paper, I'm just sliding this island over to the side. And man, did they rage when I dove it down. The card's just great. That said, the pick for me here is probably the Colossal Dreadmaw. If I can get, again, in a format of Hill Giants, this is basically a 2-for-1. Now, I'm not guaranteed to get to play it, but if I get to be in green, and if I can have a Colossal Dreadmaw or two, I'm going to be super happy about that. It doesn't really necessarily go with the Cutlass very well or the Contract Killing very well, because black-green is actually kind of difficult to get me into, and I don't really like the color pair. I think I've only played it twice, and once was when I opened a Vraska. But that for me is just clearly the most powerful card that we're looking at here. So I'm just going to take the good stuff and then see where we end up.
Yeah, I took Dire Fleet Hoarder, so I would have had Rowdy Crew Unfriendly Fire into Dire Fleet Hoarder. I still think I would be on Dire Fleet Hoarder here, despite it being a way weaker card. I think two drops in the format have been pretty important, and I've not been in love with green. I've not found much success with green. So if you've been having success with green, I would love to know what's been working about that for you.
I've been taking Colossal Dreadmaws early.
And casting them.
Yeah, and casting them.
The card is bigger than everything in the format.
Yeah, if you can get something like this and then maybe wheel New Horizons. And like, my two drops typically are not very good two drops. I'm just looking for them to trade off with the opponent's two drops at that point. But like, the two drops I'm looking for in green are usually the Merfolk guy, the Deep Root Warrior. And even the 0/3 Explore dude in green is pretty good. But I've not really been prioritizing two drops. I've kind of been trying to pick up the removal spells and like the reasons to be in a color. And then I'll just fill it out with whatever I can get.
Sure, absolutely. All right, so Travis has now got Contract Killing, Pirate's Cutlass, and Colossal Dreadmaw in his pile. And pack one, pick four, he sees Skymarch Bloodletter. That's 2 and a black for the 2/2 flying vampire that drains your opponent when it enters the battlefield. Skyblade of the Legion. That's 1 and a white for the 1/3 vampire with flying. So maybe Vamps is open. I see a couple vampires there. Drover of the Mighty. That's 1 and a green for the 1/1 human druid, I believe, that when you control another dinosaur, it gets +2/+2, and it can tap to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. And then Chart a Course, the 1 and a blue sorcery, lets you draw 2 cards, discard a card, and if you triggered Raid, you do not have to discard a card.
Yeah, I think you could ignore your first 3 picks and just take the Drover of the Mighty. The card's very good. You don't even have to be in dinosaurs. Like, you just put it in your Merfolk deck and cast your Air Elementals or whatever. It's great.
Yeah, it's a very, very powerful card. Very clearly the most powerful card in the pack. That is also what I selected there. And then moving on to pack one, pick five. So Travis now has Contract Killing, Pirate's Cutlass, Colossal Dreadmaw, and Drover the Mighty in his pile. He sees another Sky March Bloodletter, the 2-2 Flying Vampire, Sailor of Means, the 2 and a blue for a 1-4 Pirate that when it enters the battlefield you get a treasure token, Runaground, 3 and a blue for the instant that puts target artifact or creature, I think, on top of its owner's library. Ravenous Daggertooth, the 2 and a green for a 3-2 Dinosaur that has the Enrage trigger of you gain 2 life. And then Ixalan's Binding, 3 and a white for the enchantment that does an O-ring. It exiles target non-land permanent, and they cannot cast cards that share the same name with the exiled card underneath Ixalan's Binding.
Yeah, worth pointing out that we've seen our second Bloodletter, and I think that card's quite good.
Yes, I agree.
I've played it in every black deck, as many as I could get, and was always happy with it. I don't think Ravenous Daggertooth is quite, like, it's a little out of its league with these other cards. So I'm kind of not interested in that, but I can't imagine getting a fifth pick Ixalan's Binding and not thinking, okay, we should be doing something with white.
Yeah, it's a pretty big signal. Is that what you're going with there?
Yeah, yeah. Lock me in, final answer.
Yeah, that's also what I took as a signal. And then pack one, pick six. So Travis now has Contract Killing, Pirate's Cutlass, Colossal Dreadmaw, Drover the Mighty, and an Ixalan's Binding. He sees Runaground, that's 3 and a blue for the put target artifact or creature on top of its owner's library again. New Horizons, the enchant land that lets ramps you and puts a +1/+1 counter on something again. Ixali's Diviner, that's 1 and a green for the 0-3 2-drop that explores when it enters the battlefield. Pterodon Knight, that's 3 and a white for the 3-3 Hill Giant that if you control another dinosaur, it gets flying. And finally, you see Siren Storm Tamer, that's the single blue mana for the 1-1 flyer that's got the activated ability of single blue mana. Sacrifice Siren Storm Tamer, counter target a spell or ability that targets you or a permanent you control.
I've been actually really happy with Siren Storm Tamer.
It's been very, very good in blue, yeah. Because one with the wind is so good, and just having an onboard way, when your opponent knows they have to spend 2 removal spells to get your creature that you suited up with one with the wind off the board, it's just a pretty demoralizing feeling.
While you're poking them for one a turn, like it's not irrelevant either, you know?
Yeah, it's been great. And it triggers raid, like blue cares about raid a decent amount.
Mm-hmm. So, like, so far in my pile, I've got a couple of good green cards, a good white card, a good black card. I'm probably just going to go with the Diviner here, the 0-3 Explore dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think be pretty happy with that. It blocks me if we end up doing Dinosaurs things against various Grizzly Bears. It can even hold back 3-1s potentially. And I'm relatively happy if it hits. It goes well in green-white, specifically if we happen to get the Butt Fight Dinosaur. So I think there's just a lot to like there. And this just kind of sets us solidly in green. We can see if we get some good high-value black cards and pair that with a Contract Killing. I'd kind of prefer to go more towards the white side of things. Is like that's an actual tribe that we can do with the Ixalan's Binding. But I think I would just slam the Diviner here.
Yeah, awesome. I actually ended up taking New Horizons, thinking that maybe I was going to be able to get like a multicolor control deck going on with the New Horizons and the Drover the Mighty. Had a couple high-powered cards, I thought at the time, in Unfriendly Fire and Ixalan's Binding. And I actually ended up drafting kind of a mess. It kind of ended up being a Jund ramp deck. It played out okay. It was a 2-1 deck, but it was nothing special. So with the cards you've got in your pile, you're hoping to go into white-green dinosaurs from there?
That would be my hope, but at least green something. And who knows, after the first 6 picks, like then you start to really see what's open. And I'm not unwilling to jump ship, right? Like if we see the 3-mana burn spell from red, I'll probably take that next and be happy about it and settle into red-green dinosaurs. I think I'm probably pretty firmly in green, but I'd be willing to give on the other color.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things I've experienced, and I'm curious if you have as well, that it's sometimes hard to move late, like past pick 6 to abandon ship because the playables aren't super deep in the format. Have you had that happen to you at all?
No, you can make the excuse that it's hard to move, but as soon as you recognize that you should move, just move. It's fine. There's like 2.5 more packs of cards. Yeah, there's not as many playables here as before because you have to build for synergy rather than raw power level. But like if I see a signal pick 7, like let's say that it's pick 7 and we see something like Drover of the Mighty and I've been drafting vampires. It's like, okay, I need to be green. If this made it through 6 people to get to me, I need to just take this card and switch gears and it'll be fine because I'm going to get all it, it's not. Is Drover of the Mighty better than the black and white cards that I have? It's is Drover of the Mighty and all the other good green I'm going to see better than those cards? And I think the answer more often than not is yes. Like, I'm very willing to make that switch. Usually when I do, it means I don't end up with much of a sideboard, but I end up with a better deck.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a pretty important distinction, what you said there, where you're taking that card plus all the other future picks you're going to get into consideration versus what you've already got and maybe are getting cut out of. So like the risk reward versus future opportunity versus maybe getting cut if you're not in the right place.
I mean, I kind of look at pack one, pick one as flirting. Pack one, pick three is like first date. Pack one, pick five is as maybe we're going steady. And I'm not ready to get married until pack two.
That's hilarious. I don't know that I've ever heard that analogy before. I know they did a little bit on limited resources, but I don't think quite that clearly there. That was great. All right. So we're going to talk about some sealed. Before we dive straight into Ixalan sealed, just kind of what's your general approach to when you sit down to build a sealed pool?
Sealed is fantastic. It's one of my favorite formats. And it reminds me of when I first started playing Magic. And it's me and three or four of my buddies, and we just have the cards we have, and we're trying to build the best decks to beat each other with what we've got. And I've not found another way to kind of reclaim that feeling. It is also the competitive format for Limited. If you ever want to draft competitively, you have to play Sealed first. Right?
I know, it's such a drag.
Yeah, well, some people think of it that way, but I actually think it's a lot of fun. So the first step for me, and I actually got a lot of this from my good friend Martin Brunet. We've done some team seals together. I think we actually got 23rd at Team Sealed GP DC a while back. But the step one, I want to go through and separate all the colors. Okay. And then I want to make three piles per color. Pile number one is the cards that I'm almost assuredly not going to play, right? Like cards that are just bad or cards that are strictly sideboard. Demystify is an example. Like I'm just not going to play that, right?
Right, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Pile two are cards that I can play, but like I'm not really excited about it. So in sealed, something like Skyblade of the Legion probably goes in this pile. Something like Seeker's Squire, even though it's a very good card, it's not like, oh my God, we opened a Seeker's Squire, we've got to play black.
Right. It's just a good card that if you're in black is going to make your deck a lot better.
Exactly. And then the last step is the cards that make me want to be that color. Typically, these are your removal spells. But you also need to be on the lookout for cards that can kind of just win the game on their own if you resolve them and they don't mess with it. I don't exactly know the names of all the cards because I tend to make a lot of nicknames up while I'm streaming and we end up with some interesting ones. But the Sarah Vampire, you know what I'm talking about. 3WW for the 4/4, you can play life to give it vigilance and or flying.
Yes, absolutely. Like,
if I can land that and my opponent doesn't mess with it, I'm likely to win the game. So like those are my reasons to be in a color. And once I've got all of that separated, I'm going to look at what two color pair gives me the most of those cards that I want to play and then try to fill out the deck from there. That's a very basic starting guide, but that's how I'm starting.
And have you built sealed pools in real life as well? Like it's a lot easier to like sort and click through things on Magic Online, et cetera, et cetera. Have you gone through building in real life and do you use that exact same approach?
Yes. Yes to both. When I'm at a pre-release or when I'm at a GP, I do it the exact same way. You've got enough time when you're doing it in paper and it's not actually that difficult. If space is a concern, you can kind of lay down the first stack of cards that you're not really going to play, right? Like the white cards that are just garbage, where they're facing up and down from you. Then take the stack of cards that are going to be your filler, but your playables, and face them where they're facing left to right from you on top of the other pile. And then take your reasons to be that color and put them on top of it, again, facing up and down from your perspective. And that lets you kind of see at a glance which pile has the most cards in which area. So like I can be like, okay, I've got 5 white cards that I want to play, but almost no white filler. 2 green cards that I want to play, but 11 green filler cards. Maybe we can look at white-green.
Yeah, that makes sense. Excellent. And one of the most striking things about Seal that happened for when I very first interacted with you, I was going to GP Indy and I popped into your channel and I was just trying to get a sense of the format and what was good and what a good deck looked like. And you were playing a deck that I thought looked pretty good. And I typed in chat like, hey, what score would you give this deck out of 10? And you were like, well, I don't really like to rate decks per se. Like I like to in sealed judge how well you built your pool. So did you build your pool a 10 out of 10 or did you arrive at a suboptimal build and maybe you only built your pool like a 7 out of 10? That really struck a chord with me because I like to focus on things that are in my control. And obviously you have no control over you know, what kind of cards you open. The only thing you have control over is building the best possible deck with your cards. So I thought that was a really interesting outlook you had.
Yeah, like the last limited PTQ that I top eighted, it was with a deck that I think somebody in the beginning said, you may as well just drop and draft today. Like it wasn't a good pool, but even the worst pools can win. So like why focus on I opened a crap pool or I opened a bomb pool? Like opening a good pool doesn't guarantee you a win, and opening a garbage one, yeah, if I'm at the local game store and my wife wants to go see a movie, I'm probably going to cash that one in and go see the movie, right?
But sure, like, yeah.
If I've driven 5 hours to go to a GP and I open a pool that doesn't look particularly good, we got to make something out of it. So I tried to shift my focus away from that luck factor of did I open a good pool or not to did I do the best that I could with it? And in the example this morning, I should have been splashing for that Mark of the Vampire. So that build that I had was a 9 out of 10 or worse, because it would have been better if I had included that card in the main deck. And like that gives me something that I can focus on and change between games and be like, okay, here's what I can do different next time. So that's my thing. I'll rate a sealed pool, but it'll be on how close is it to the optimal build.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think Magic players in general with sealed, or at least people that like to draft a lot and don't enjoy sealed as much, tend to focus on how good the pool they opened was, myself included. And that was a really eye-opening moment when you said that to me, because it's just perfectly logical. It makes perfect sense. There's no reason to whine or moan about the pool you opened. You're going to play Magic. You traveled somewhere. You've got to make the best deck possible. So why not focus on that? So what are some of the differences you found between sealed and draft?
The biggest difference is how synergy-based a format is will tell you how far away draft and sealed are going to be. And I think Emenket and Hour of Devastation are actually two of the better examples of this in recent memory. Emenket draft was all about synergy, because aggro decks are basically synergy decks. It's the synergy of having one and two drops and combat tricks and ways to augment them, right?
Yeah.
So like you could pick up enough of those that was your deck and that's what you're doing. But in Emenket sealed, it was nothing like that. You did not open enough of those one and two drops to be able to make an aggro deck very often. You could still do it about 15% of the time, but Emenket sealed by the end became far more of how many Gifts of Paradise did you open? So like generally speaking, sealed decks are going to have a wider gap in power between the cards. Imagine draft as being relatively flat, but all of the cards are working together towards a single goal. Whereas in sealed, there's a huge spike in the power level of cards. You've got some garbage that you're playing and just hoping you can trade it for a card, any card that your opponent has. And then your bombs are probably, generally speaking, Ixalan, not quite like this, but most sealed formats, you will have stone cold bombs that you just need to play. Because if you slam that Glorybringer, what are they going to do? Like, I splashed for Glorybringer off of 2 Gifts of Paradise at a GP, and it was great.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's the biggest difference, is the decks usually in sealed are more powerful, but less focused.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you make sure in sealed, I know I've heard you talk about this on stream too, how do you make sure you build a good mana base in sealed when you're playing multiple colors and avoid maybe playing like the Devil's Mana Base, the 666?
Yeah, a lot of people have trouble with this one and think because it's sealed that it's just okay. They're like, well, I don't have enough playables in blue-green, so I'll just run, you know, these 5 red cards. And that's just not acceptable unless you have any fixing. Now, if you've got a lot of pirates that make treasure and you've got some of the Land Before Time, New Horizons, I believe the card's actually called, sure, build an interesting mana base and go something like that. But my rule of thumb is if you don't have fixing, you can't splash. Period.
Yeah, that seems like a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, and like I've certainly lost to decks that just had atrocious mana bases. As far as I know, for all I know, the last 2 cards in their deck were Evolving Wilds, right? But like, I didn't see any fixing and they were playing straight 3 colors. I'm never going to do that, because like, usually when I'm playing these tournaments, it's because I want to win them.
Right. Well, so when I was a younger Magic player, and you know, I knew what a splash was, like people talked about splashing, but you know, I think back in the day, like when I was, you know, maybe in high school or something, and I would draft or whatever, we would play sealed, like we would play 7/7/3, like, and we wanted, because we knew we wanted 3 sources for our splash, like we'd heard that somewhere. Like, that also probably pretty unacceptable, you think?
No, I think that's fine. About 3 sources for a splash is good.
But then do you think you're hurting your 2 main colors too much only having 7/7 in that type of situation? Or do you think that's something you can get away with?
I'd almost never do that. Like, one of those colors I'm going to be leaning on for 2 drops. And if I, it's a disaster if, You've probably heard me talk some on my other podcast as well as on the stream about mulliganing. If you have to mulligan in limited, you're throwing away 10 percentage points. Like, I never want to do that. And building a 7/7/3 mana base is a great way to make sure that you have to mulligan. Like, I just don't want to do that. Whatever color I'm leaning on for two drops, I need to have at least 8 sources, preferably 9.
Yeah, that's so funny you mentioned that. That was actually the very first. I remember when the very first time I went to your channel, like within 30 seconds of me being in there, you were like, what am I supposed to do here? Mulligan or not? Let's do the math. We're going to play Magic by the math. That's what we do here at this channel. Like you seem to be very like odds oriented, very spiky and very logical about how you're approaching your decision-making process.
And that's the thing here. Like if I'm building a deck in such a way that it's going to make me mulligan more often because I can't cast the spells, and I know that generally speaking, there's a lot of math behind this, and I know we don't want to get into it here, but generally speaking, if I click that mulligan button, I'm throwing away 10 percentage points. I want to make sure I build a deck that doesn't have to do that very often.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So do you have any specific approaches? Obviously, you're playing a lot of sealed, like when each new format comes out, because that's the PTQ format, and you're going to play in those PTQs on Sundays. Do you have any specific method for how you try to figure out like what's optimal or quote what works in any given sealed format?
The main thing for me is to try to avoid gimmicky cards or cards that need to combo out to win. And there's a lot of neat combos in this format, and it's a lot of fun when you're able to assemble them or get two copies of one of them. And whatever the format is, there's always something like that where you kind of you build the machine and then you draw the two cards and you put it together and it's awesome. And that just tends not to win sealed games. So any sort of like weird combo-y card, I usually don't use it. And I'll have people in chat say, you know, when you have card A, card B is so good with it. Like, yeah, but card A is really good on its own and it doesn't need card B. But if I draw card B, it's kind of terrible.
Without card A, yeah.
Exactly. So I want to avoid that. So I tend to come in pretty conservatively, try to evaluate the cards just on a power level. One of the things I do whenever I do a set review, I have a stream viewer, Zombub, who is fantastic. He did this last time, but if he doesn't do it, I'll have somebody do it. Make a spreadsheet of the average power and toughness of a format. So like when I went into this format, I knew that it was a format of Hill Giants.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good idea.
Already knowing that, I can look at the removal spells and say 3 damage is great. 4 damage doesn't do much more than 3, because most of the stuff I want to kill is 3. So I could evaluate creatures, you know, size based off of that knowledge that we're looking at a format of, you know, 4 mana 3/3s.
Yeah, that's excellent. So diving in specifically to Ixalan, do you have any like thoughts about this format that can help listeners that are sitting down, you know, maybe for their PPTQ, trying to get to that PPTQ stage that you play every week, or that already have qualified and are going to sit down next Sunday on their PTQ? Do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, absolutely. A big part of Ixalan when you're drafting, and you've experienced this too, I'm sure, like it's not just about figuring out what colors open, right?
No, it's about tribe too, or what plant. Like I found that my decks that have like a very focused plan have done the best.
Exactly. So, you know, I have to be in, if I'm in blue green, I also need to be specifically in merfolk, right? Like if I'm getting some great blue pirates and some awesome green dinosaurs, I'm probably at a bit of a disadvantage against the opponent who's playing white black and has very focused vampire synergies.
Right. Yeah.
So the first thing that you want to do in Ixalan sealed deck is do that split out, like I mentioned before, but then also look at those synergy cards. Because there's some cards that will go from almost completely unplayable to amazing in your deck, depending on how many friends you have with it. Deacon of the Anointed is probably the best example of a card that has huge spikes in power level. If you put that in a deck with 10 other vampires, it's great. If it's the only vampire in your deck, it's awful.
Right. It's really not very good at all. Yeah.
Yeah. So like from what I've seen so far, about 10% of the Ixalan sealed pools that you open actually do have some powerful synergy engines like that going for them. So make sure that you're aware of that and looking at it. Assuming it's not there, and most of the time it won't be, you kind of have to ignore some of this tribal synergy and just look for the most powerful cards on their own. I would also suggest that if you're playing Ixalan sealed, one of the things that I've found very interesting in this format is that the creatures in the non-dinosaur tribes are kind of a power level that we might have seen 3 or 4 years ago. And then that's made up for because they synergize so well.
Right.
Whereas the dinosaurs are just normal magic creatures that we're used to these days. They're big. They're efficiently costed creatures. And there's really no downside for them. Like the synergy of playing dinosaurs is there were some cards that worked nicely with them, but you didn't necessarily need them. That kind of makes dinosaurs the boogeyman in Ixalan Sealed. So either you have a good dinosaur deck, and I've had some, or you have a deck that's mostly hill giants, and you're going to go up against decks like yours and dinosaur decks. Make sure you have a plan for dinosaurs because you will see them.
Right. Colossal Dreadmaw seems like it would be a very good card in Sealed to open.
Yeah, it's in the pile of reasons to be green when I'm sorting out my Sealed pools.
Yeah, so do you have any, like, maybe for people that don't play a lot of Sealed off the top of your head, do you have any cards like that that go into those piles at the common level? Like, that you're going to see draft in and draft out? Or not draft in and draft out, Sealed pool in and Sealed pool out?
Yeah, let me pull up a card image gallery and I can point some out for us real quick, especially the commons.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think, like, knowing... certainly, like, it'll be easier to tell, too. Like, people generally know which uncommons and rares are good. But if you don't play a lot of Sealed, knowing which commons are reasons to pull you into a color, I think that could be super helpful.
Yeah, let's run down the list here real quick. I'm going to specifically look at commons that go in that pile. Legion's Judgment is one that I want exactly one of in my main deck. And then I'll note how many I have in my side deck. Paladin of the Bloodstained is another overperforming white card. It's a format of hill giants. This gives me something that trades with a hill giant and leaves behind a token. So I'm usually pretty happy with that. The token also carries Pirate's Cutlasses very well. If you can give that equipment lifelink or flying or trample or whatever, it's going to get better. Pious Interdiction, people probably figured that one out.
Yeah.
I think those are the primary ones, although Territorial Hammer Skull is also in that pile for white.
But that only if you have an aggressive deck, right? The card's not great if you're not planning on being aggressive.
It's not great, but if you're running 3/2 drops, you can have an aggressive draw with it. And it can even act as, like, let's say we get to parity, and we're at parity because they have a 6/6, and I have a board of hill giants against their board of hill giants. There may come a point where I turn that curve or draw a combat trick or something that will let the Hammer Skull survive. So even if I'm not particularly aggressive, I'm still playing Hammer Skulls if I'm white.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
But you're right. It does get a nod towards it's certainly better if we're being aggressive. There's a little bit of a challenge for blue in that most of the reason to play blue comes from synergies rather than individual card levels. I actually can't think looking through here of a common that makes me interested in blue, although I will note how many Sailor of Memes that I have because that will let you splash some other cards.
Yeah, that and Prosperous Pirates are pretty big game in Sealed, aren't they? Like for the ability to let you splash, like if you open a good pool with high powered level cards, like across multiple colors, like rares or uncommons, those give you the ability to play like a 5-color base blue deck. I know I've heard MJ, Michael Jacob, talking about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I have certainly played that one too. And I think the Water Tap Weaver also kind of belongs in that camp as well.
Of commons that pull you into blue.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned Anointed Deacon. Again, that only goes if you have vampires, but for black, obviously the removal spells, Contract Killing being probably the headliner there. The one that destroys a creature with 3 or less power.
Oh, Vanquish the Weak?
Yeah, a little less exciting, although still something that I'm going to play. It not being able to kill a dinosaur is a problem, but it can kill most of the little stuff that matters. I found any sort of evasion to be pretty good, so not to poop on blue too much. There are some common flyers, and I would take those. But Direfleet Interloper is one that I quite like a lot in black.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that would not be very intuitive to me. So you think that's a reason to play black?
I think it's a reason in Sealed. Like 3 of them aren't going to like have me jumping through hoops, but I'm interested in it. And I mentioned Mark of the Vampire.
Oh, God, that card's so good.
It's just very good, especially in Sealed. And then Skullduggery. I've gotten so many good exchanges off the back of a Skullduggery.
Oh, yeah. That card overperforms as well. 1 mana, ability to 2-for-1. It's great. Or win a combat, pick off an X1. Yeah, just so versatile for 1 mana.
In red, I would note that the first Fire Cannon Blast is of interest to me. Any additional copies I will probably play, but I'm not overly excited about. Again, because they're kind of killing hill giants, but not necessarily bigger stuff. And bigger stuff may be what I'm actually having a problem with.
Right, and if they have the bigger stuff, you can't attack into it without throwing away a creature to trigger the raid.
Mm-hmm. I had saved this as an answer to one of the viewer questions, but I'll mention it here. Rummaging Goblin is really in that second pile, but it's awful close to the top pile because it's just fantastic and Sealed. Once you've hit your 5th or 6th land in most decks, you don't need them anymore, and being able to cash them in is fantastic. So I've been super happy with Goblins when I'm playing red.
And the games are going to go a little bit longer in Sealed as well, generally, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We already mentioned Colossal Dreadmaw for green. Deeproot Warrior is something that I'm interested in. If I've got two or, God forbid, three of these, they can be impossible to block for some decks for a long time.
Yeah, and what about Grazing Whiptail, the 2 green green for the 3/4 reach? Is that a reason to play green and sealed?
It kind of is, man.
I would imagine it's a pretty good blocker.
It's a fantastic blocker. It's even a decent attacker. Like, again, we're looking at a world of hill giants, right? Like, nothing attacks through this thing. It can block just about all of the flyers that you're interested in. I think only Air Elemental can force through it.
Yeah.
I do always keep an eye on how many New Horizons I have as well, just because sometimes I'm going to get into multiple color shenanigans with that particular card.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's super awesome. Thank you for doing that. So we've got some listener questions here. Ryan Sachs wants to know how often you find yourself double splashing in Ixalan Sealed. So like being base two colors, like say maybe base black red, and then like splashing a white and a blue card or something, for example.
Out of 8 events, I think I've done that twice.
So maybe like that's a very small sample size, but 25% of the time there.
Yeah, it is a very small sample size, but it's going more towards what you had mentioned as far as a multicolor blue deck or blue-green splashing like a Pious Interdiction and a Mark of the Vampire, for example. Like, I've certainly done that. And that's enabled in this format in particular because of the treasure tokens. So like if I'm playing, I've played blue-black and splashed, I think, red and white in it for one card. And I believe I was actually using treasure as my only sources. I had 6 treasure producers.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it was great.
So that rolls right into another listener question here from DC Sports 8, which says, Travis, how many treasure makers do you need to splash a single colored card, like Charging Monstrosaur?
3.
So, and what then, how does that fluctuate? Like, let me add on to that. So let's say you're base blue-green, and you've got like a couple Sailor of Means and a Prosperous Pirates. So you've got like maybe 4 treasure makers. Like how many off-colored cards, like when you start getting into multiples, like how many treasure producers do you want, or how many cards do you need to limit yourself? Like, because you can't just go nuts. Like, you can't say like with 3 treasure makers, okay, I've got my 3 sources, I can do whatever I want, because they're not reusable, right?
Mm-hmm. And you have to also recognize that treasure is doing 2 things for you in this format. One is ramping you and the other is fixing you. So if you're using it to fix, you cannot use it to ramp. So look at the casting cost of your deck and say, how interested is this deck in getting to 6 or 7 mana? If it's not particularly interested except for the splash cards, then go ahead and do it, man. But like, generally for me, I want 3 free sources to be able to splash a card. I want 4 free sources to splash 2 cards. If I can have 5 free sources, and by that I mean 3 treasure producers and 2 Gifts of Paradise, for example, then I can play 3 or 4 cards. If we're going beyond that, we're not splashing anymore. We're just playing a multicolored deck. So Usually when I think about splashing, I'm like, okay, I have a Pious Interdiction and I want to play that in my blue-black Pirates deck. I have 4 treasure producers. Do I need a Plains? No, you don't need a Plains. As long as the deck isn't going to need to use that treasure for something else. If it's a deck that's also running a bunch of 6 drops for some reason, then you know you might want to reconsider that.
Right, where there's an awkward tension of like you have the white card in your hand, but you also know you want to ramp out the 6 drop and you're going to have to choose between the 2. Like, yeah, that sounds like a place you don't want to be.
Yeah, you want to avoid that.
I'm still a little fuzzy on, like, let's say you've only got treasures. Like, you're trying to play 5 color blue. And I don't really know what this looks like, because I figured, you know, you playing sealed. I thought about doing a sealed today, and I was like, what am I going to get out of doing one sealed event? So I settled for drafting and watching you and Michael Jacob play some sealed today. Let's say you're blue and you're trying to splash and you've got 3 Sailor of Means and 2 Prosperous Pirates. You open commons very well. How many off-color cards can you play off of those cards? Like with 5 treasure producers, 7 total treasure tokens. What do you think that enables you to do?
I would say probably 2 comfortably, 3 if you want to push it. Because again, I mentioned that I kind of want 4 sources for 2 cards, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what these are. It doesn't matter that the cards aren't the same color, because your splashing is essentially fixing you for whatever color you want. So I would look at it as almost as if you're splashing a single color and view the sources that way, and then just play whatever you want for the splash. If you're only fixing is through treasure, then it doesn't really matter that you're splashing a white card and 2 red cards in your blue-black deck, because the fixing will allow you to cast all of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And so does the, like, if you're trying to splash double-colored cards, does that get tougher off of just treasures? Like, how does that work in your mind? Like, if you're, I don't know, can you splash... trying to think of a double colored card I'd really want to play. Like, can, if you're not red green, can you splash the red green uncommon off of treasure, like the 5/5 trample dinosaur, Raging Sword Tooth?
Sure, that guy I can certainly splash. What I can't splash is a Colossal Dreadmaw.
Why do you say that?
Double colored in the casting cost, that's the same color, I'm not going to be able to fit in the mana base. Now, there is an exceptional pool that will do that, where you've opened up, for example, three of the Land Before Time cards. New Horizons, sorry, nicknames. And I will equate that to splashing a Glorybringer in Hour of Devastation Sealed, where you had a couple of the Exert Nagas that tapped for double colors and Gifts of Paradise proper. So you can do that there. But if I'm playing green or red and I have the red-green dinosaur, that's relatively easy to fit in there with minimal fixing. But I don't typically try to splash double-colored cards. If it's super powerful and you can't imagine playing the deck without this card in it, then just play that color.
Yeah. So how about a different example? How about if you've got two Prosperous Pirates and a Contract Killing in your base blue-black deck? Would that make you feel comfortable splashing something like a Colossal Dreadmaw? Like those one-shot double treasure token makers?
We can consider it. I'm still wondering what the rest of the deck is trying to do. Because usually, like, those double treasure-producing guys, I'm looking to, like, enable some sort of ramp strategy or something to do with that mana.
Sure, yeah. I just didn't know if that... felt comfortable to you, or if you thought that was clunky or risky or unnecessarily risky, or if that was just a safe place to be.
I actually think it's relatively safe. I guess I hadn't wrapped my head around the fact that if that's all the fixing I have, and I've got it specifically earmarked for fixing, right? Like, I understand I cannot use this treasure for anything else unless I've drawn duplicate treasure before I've drawn the Dreadmaw, then yeah, you could probably get away with that.
Right, as long as you know, because treasure also lets you sometimes double spell, like in a single turn, like if you want to use your treasure for that too, like beyond just ramping you, like on turn five, if you've got a couple treasure laying around, you can play a 3-drop and a 4-drop sometimes as well.
Which is a huge point in the game, or, you know, play it and leave up a removal spell or a combat trick.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got another question here from MMP5BF, that's his Twitch username, and he wants to know, Travis, is it more important to play good cards in Ixalan Sealed, or do you try to build around synergies?
I would say if you have the synergies and they're good, right? Like, if you have synergies that you're like, this looks like kind of a medium draft deck, you should probably go for it. That's going to be great and sealed. However, you're not often going to have that. So again, some sort of payoff card. I'm trying to think of the name of the black vampire that drains people.
Sanctum Seeker, the rare?
Bishop of the Bloodstained. That's the one thing. Yeah. If it doesn't drain them, it just domes them for each vampire you control. So something like that with five vampires isn't actually all that good in sealed. Like, you're kind of overpaying for a hill giant that might ping your opponent for 2 or 3 damage when you play it. And that's not super exciting. Right. So, like, don't try to force synergies in there just because you're like, oh, I got a card that is a vampire payoff and I've got a couple of vampires. That's probably not going to cut it. So I think I would err on the side of play good cards. But in this format in particular, since we're talking about Ixalan, make sure that you're checking out those synergies. And, like, I'd hate for somebody to open a really good vampire deck and then be like, well, Travis said to play the good cards, so I'm just going to play the dinosaurs and the white spells. If the synergy's there, by all means, play it. It's just, in my experience so far, it's not usually there as often in sealed. So I'm really looking for those cards that are just kind of better on their own.
Right. So this is probably a pretty hard question to actually answer, but let's say you've got a good white-black vampires deck that looks a little more like a draft deck, and you've got the option to play like a more dirtily multicolor splashing deck with more powerful cards. Like, do you have a sense of which one of those is intrinsically better in the format at all?
I would guess that if you have the synergy and you have a plan for when your opponent plays a 6/6, that you should play the synergy deck.
Okay, yeah, I'm just very curious about that, with it being a synergy-based format.
Well, you know, we came from Emenket, where there were certain cards that your opponent could play, and you couldn't realistically win the game after they were resolved. Most of the gods, Glorybringer, come to mind. There were several other rares that were just very difficult to deal with. And I think a big facet of that was because variance was being eliminated from those limited matches due to cycling being in the game, that we had to have higher power spikes in the cards so that a less skilled player could still win sometimes. Leaving that and moving to this format, it's almost a build-your-own-rare format, right? Like, you just don't open that level of bombs very often. There's just not that many in the set. However, with the synergy, you can kind of make something that's that powerful. So if you've opened that synergy, you've kind of built your own Glorybringer. If you didn't, then you're just going to need to go with the big stuff and the good removal spells.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so SunBeetle707, this is our last listener question we've got here, wants to know, Travis, what are the top five cards in Ixalan that are good in draft but bad in sealed or vice versa?
You know, I think we've actually covered a good bit of these, but my number one is Rummaging Goblin. When I've played in draft, I'm pretty happy to have one of those in my sideboard because most of my red decks in draft are aggressive leaning, and I'm not really interested in having a 3-mana 1/1 in my deck. But in sealed, I'm actively interested in a Rummaging Goblin. The first time you activate it, you're not getting value yet. It's the second time that you're activating it that value starts to churn. And I'm at the point now where if my opponent plays a Rummaging Goblin and I have a premium removal spell, I will kill it. I will kill it as soon as I possibly can.
Right, because it potentially represents 3 or 4 cards over the course of a longer game.
Yeah, if you're not going to win the game in the next turn or two, this is going to essentially draw them somewhere around 4 or 5 cards. And then it can still chump block towards the end of the game and loot, you know, or excuse me, rummage one more time or carry a sword and attack you. Like, there's a lot of flexibility in having that body. So, like, I think Rummaging Goblin is very good in sealed. And, I mean, it's okay to play it in draft, but I'm never particularly excited about it. I mentioned Anointed Deacon, and I also put in here Commune with Dinosaurs. This kind of just goes to the point about synergy, right? Like, I've played draft decks that were 16 lands and 2 copies of Commune with Dinosaurs, because, you know, I had 13 dinosaurs in the deck. It was just better than a land as long as I was running 9 forests.
Right. It's essentially a split land creature in a dedicated dinosaur deck.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, very good.
You get into sealed and like you're like, well, I've got 4 dinosaurs, so I'll play 16 lands and 2 commune with dinosaurs. It's like, that kind of doesn't make sense anymore, right? And the deacon kind of goes with the same problem. If it's in my white-black deck with, you know, 12 other vampires, it's going to be great. But if it's in my black-green sealed deck that has 2 other vampires, it's not something I'm going to be as interested in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I put Legion's Judgment in here as well. I think I mentioned that one earlier as well. I don't typically main deck one of those in draft, although I'm happy to have one in my sideboard. Whereas in sealed, I actively want to main deck one just because people are going in on the enchantments to pump something and this will let me kill them, or they'll have dinosaurs. And then I'm not unhappy to have a second in the sideboard and bring it in quite often.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I'm in the same spot. I'm not main decking it in draft, but it seems like the first copy would be pretty good in sealed.
And then Colossal Dreadmaw was the other one that I mentioned here. I think it's actually pretty good in draft, but it's like a bomb in sealed. It's just the biggest thing on the planet and very difficult for anyone to interact with.
And does having Colossal Dreadmaws in your deck make you want to put combat tricks in your deck more, since people are going to be incentivized to double block it a lot of the time if they don't have removal spells? Or do you think it's just... is that the card A is good, card B makes card A better scenario?
A lot of the combat tricks in this format kind of suck. So, like, I'll still play them. I particularly like the white one. 1 mana for +2/+2 is a pretty good rate. Whereas the ones from all the other colors are just a little bit too expensive for me to get excited about. So I'm not going to prioritize combat tricks because I have them. What I will do is prioritize trading off to keep the board as close to empty as I can get it. So that when I play a 6/6, all they have is 1 hill giant left. They're under a colossal amount of pressure, you might say.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. The band director in me loves puns. Yeah, so I think... That's a kind of a good place to wrap up. We also have Michael Jacob. I know you watch his stream, and I do a little bit too. He posted on Twitter recently a picture of his spreadsheet that he uses that's all of his stats. And he's done over 132 matches. And according to his spreadsheet tracking there, Boros, Dimir, and Simic have been performing the best for him. And I think a lot of Dimir and Simic would be like the base blue decks with Sailor of Means and Prosperous Pirates that are splashing multiple colors off those treasure cards. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like he most often played Simic or Gruul. Those seemed like his two most played. And that's probably what you were talking about, where like he's got dinosaurs and he's playing good cards and splashing good cards. And then all of the other color pairs have, like, you know, 5-10 times he's played them, where he got those synergy decks that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 10% of the time you're going to run into that. So I'll post that Imgur link if people are interested in that in the show notes to see what's been working for him as well. So next episode, next week, we're probably going to dive more into draft. You'll be back with Tupperware and I. As usual, thank you to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen. Just a reminder, we've got our treasure hunt achievements posted. If you want to find links to those, you can check out my stream or Lord Tupperware's stream, and we've got links to those in our chat if you want to do that. You can tweet at Lords of Limited and hashtag them with an XLN treasure hunt. It's super fun to get those on Twitter. It's like, it's hilarious. Like every few hours I log on to Twitter and there's a new screenshot there of somebody crossing off another achievement. It's great. So please keep those coming. If you do not do the Twittering, you can email us screenshots at lordsoflimited@gmail.com. So as a reminder, if you complete 5 of those on your own, you get entered into a giveaway for 4 draft sets of Ixalan. And for each one we accomplish as a listener base, we're going to do a combined Lords of Limited stream with Ethan and I for that amount of hours. So we're already up to, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're already up to a 9-hour stream. That is awesome in the first week. So congrats to you guys. That's going to be super fun. And where people can find us on Twitter and Twitch, Ethan is at Lord Tupperware. I'm at Mr. Metronome. Same thing on Twitch. And Ethan also has a YouTube channel. Check that out. Give him a like or a subscribe or whatever it's called over there. If you have not, he's very close to 100 to getting his own URL address. How about you, Travis? Where can people find you? And Ethan, this week is going to be on Men from Moto, your podcast that you do with David. Let's plug that for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of my content can be found on non-stream content can be found at manadeprived.com. That's the home of the weekly draft videos that I do, as well as my normal podcast, Men from Moto, with my co-host, David Seville. And we just kind of swapped the hosts this week. I thought that would be kind of fun. If you want to find my Twitch information, I'm twitch.tv/Simulin. And you can find me on Twitter under the same name, at Simulin, S-E-M-U-L-I-N.
Yeah, and if you have not, you need to go check out this man's stream. It's very, very straightforward, very logical, very practical, lots of great information, and a lot of fun, too. He's got great viewers, very kind person, very family-friendly. Absolutely A+, cannot recommend enough.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got any feedback about the show or questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com. Thank you, everybody, and see you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.